Well, even when you know it's coming, the death of a loved one comes with many emotions to unpack. And I think this is especially true when it's your partner. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Our guest today has his partner died 5 years ago, and he's written a beautiful book, a really beautiful book about his journey with grief. The book is titled Waving Goodbye, the subtitle Life After Loss. And the author is Warren Kozak. He's an author, journalist, whose writings have appeared in lots of places, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, New York Sun, other papers and magazines. And as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in. What helped you deal with the loss of a loved one? What are you maybe struggling with in that area? Love to have you part of the conversation. You can call us at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Warren Kozak, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's a great pleasure to be on WPR and be on your show. I like to listen to it when I'm in Wisconsin, so it's well, fun here.
And speaking of that, you have a pretty strong Wisconsin connection. Tell us, what is Wisconsin for you?
It is true. I am a cheesehead. I grew up in Wisconsin. I grew up in Milwaukee and West Bend. I still have a home in West Bend, and I spend a big chunk of the year in West Bend. So
it's
in the blood.
It's in your blood. Okay. And you lost your wife, Lisa, 5 years ago. Why was this a good time to write about it?
It was actually 6 years. We just passed the sixth anniversary. Why was that? Good question. Why? I didn't intend to write this book. I had no intention of writing it. And it was after 5 years. Actually, let me go back to one more step, Larry. Right after she died, which was January 1st, 2018, people brought me books. I looked for books. I looked for anything that might help. And I found most of the books impenetrable. And one of the reasons, it wasn't really the fault of the book. It was me. And I think people don't realize that you really have trouble focusing. What I say is my brain just went out to lunch. And it was weird because during her illness, I could take care of her. I could take care of our daughter, who was then a senior in high school and then her first year of college. And I could do my day job, usually from the hospital on a computer. And right after she passed away, I just lost my focus completely, which I have heard is not uncommon. It's kind of a normal thing after a trauma. And I couldn't – the books didn't help me also because a lot of them were written by psychologists, psychiatrists, and written in a very academic way. And that is why I found them impenetrable. I wrote this book it's a short book, short chapters, very clear sentences for people who are just going through it. And there's one line actually from the Joan Didion book that she wrote that has always stayed with me. When a friend of hers said, after a year, I could read headlines and I could really identify with that. Your brain just isn't able to take things in the way it normally does. After a year, it's better. After 2 years, it's even better than that. But everyone is different, and it hits everyone in different ways.
Yeah. Did it help? I mean, I wondered about the process. Did it change your path with grief?
I think I did find it cathartic. I found it helpful to write. It also helped me knowing that the book might help others. And here's a story for you. I had a very good friend who was a former nun. We shared the same birthday, and she was exactly 30 years older than me. And right after Lisa died, a mutual friend had a little birthday party for us. And I had just turned 65 that day. And my friend Elizabeth McCormick turned 95. And somebody said to her, "Elizabeth, so what have you learned in your 95 years?" And without missing a beat, Elizabeth said, "When you help others, you feel better about yourself." And I've always thought about that. And I think that I would include that in the book now, the impact. If I can help someone else, then maybe, you know, something good can come out of this.
Yeah. Well, I think it kind of surprised you, and it would probably surprise others that even though you knew Lisa would die, when it happened, you had trouble accepting that.
I was dumbfounded.
Yeah.
Even though the doctors were very clear and they were pretty accurate, you know, as to the timing and the schedule, and I just didn't believe it would happen. I didn't believe it. So I thought I write in the book, I thought I would be heroic. I thought I think I was anything but heroic. I was just, you know, completely shocked. And then I had to settle myself down because there were, you know, I have a daughter and I had to help her. And if you're an adult, you do the responsible things. And I think that actually helped.
Yeah, I'm glad it helped, for sure. And your daughter, what did it mean for you to have the support of family and friends? You write about that in the book.
It saved my life, to be honest.
Yeah.
One of the things I wrote was that a couple years later, when COVID hit, I felt so horrible for the people who lost someone, and they couldn't have the normal process of grieving. I said that if Claire and I, my daughter and I, had to come back to an empty house after the funeral, it would have been devastating. But there are rituals, and I never realized how important those rituals are. I'm Jewish. We have something called a Shiva, which is the Shiva in Hebrew stands for seven, and it's the 7 days when people come to the house. I think every religion, every culture has some variation on this. And I know Catholics have wakes. And coming into you know, it's a time when you would rather just curl into a ball and close the door and not see anyone. And you're forced to be social. You're forced to greet people. You're forced to say hello, how are you? Thank you for coming. And it is those first steps that you are taking back into life, and you're kind of forced into that. And I found that incredibly helpful. And even though I had gone through Shivas for my parents and my grandparents, it was the first time I realized its importance.
Yeah. Dennis in Two Rivers has something for us that may relate a bit to this. Let's go there. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, thank you. My parents were in hospice care for a while, so we pretty much knew one of them would die before the other. And when my dad died, my parents and I both went through anticipatory grief, and anticipatory grief wasn't really a preparation for full grief for my mom when my dad died. And it was definitely different to go through anticipatory grief than the full grief when they both died. I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah.
Dennis, I think you are absolutely right because I tried to anticipate it. I tried to gear myself up for it, and you can't. You cannot. It's completely different. The other thing I said was that it was one of the most confusing things I have ever encountered in my life because here I was with this person throughout her illness. And then I was with her when she died, and it's the same person I'm looking at, but she has gone into this different realm. And it's a realm filled with mysteries. It's the mysteries we don't understand. You know, human beings since Genesis have been dealing with this. And it's just this new paradigm filled with mysteries that we don't know.
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And maybe take a call from Cindy in Madison as well. Cindy, hi.
Hi. I'm calling because my dad and mom were married 60 years. And my mom recently passed like 4 months ago. And it was relatively sudden. We found out she was sick and then she died like 10 days later. And now their 61st anniversary is coming up. And I'm wondering what the best way to support my dad would be. I mean, he's doing okay. He has a lot of support with his church. And he's active still. And he's, but I'm concerned. I don't want it to be an anniversary party necessarily, but I want to make sure that he knows that I don't know. I really don't know what to do, so I'm wondering if you have any advice.
Cindy, ask him. ask him how he might want. When is the anniversary?
April 16th.
April, so it's coming up. Yeah. And also trust your gut and be with him. Just be with him. And it you said over 60 years? Was
yeah.
That?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. What happened with me, Cindy, was that I realized after several years, and the first year is awful. It just, there's no way of getting around it. And every one of these dates, you know, birthdays, anniversaries, holidays, you know, the person isn't there. And that is the hardest. It does get a little bit easier in the second year. For me, it did. And as I said, everyone is different. But I you know, talk with your dad. See, and you said he's doing well, so that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, and talk to him. Cindy, thank you very much for calling. Warren Kozak, our guest today, he is the author of Waving Goodbye, Life After Loss. And you can join in, too, with your own thoughts and comments. And I will say that Shyla Morgain will be coming up at 11:45 today, roughly, and she's a psychologist, of course, and will be dealing with this issue right through the entire show, so looking forward to that as well. Number to call, 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our technical director. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today with Warren Kozak. He's the author of Waving Goodbye, Life After Loss, the loss of his wife, Lisa. Now, just 6 years ago that he lost her. Join in. Questions, comments, numbers 800-642-1234. You can email to ideas@wpr.org. And your own thoughts afterwards that you say in there, in your book, that haunting silence was kind of the worst because your daughter had to go back to college. And thinking about your life and, you know, continuing on, I think you said there's nowhere to continue to anymore. At least that was your thought at the time.
Larry, that was the worst moment in a Super Bowl of bad moments. And it happened 1 week after she died. I asked Claire if she wanted to go back to school, if she wanted to take the semester off. And she said, no, she'd be better, you know, with her friends. And I was actually grateful. I think it was the right choice for her. So I took her back to school. I flew back home the next morning. And I opened the door by myself and I walked in. And this is after, you know, the house was filled with people. you know,
for a week.
People, relatives came, friends came, the guys from the gym were there. And all of a sudden you're by yourself and you're in this setting that is so familiar, that was so filled with life, you know, with, you know, we, my wife and I raised our daughter there. There were holidays and board games and we had dinner every night. And then all of a sudden you're facing this new life by yourself and you can't quite accept it. And what I wrote in the book is that for a while you kind of expect them to come through the front door again, like they did thousands of times before. And then after a while you realize that's not going to happen. And you're going to have to figure out this new life by yourself. And I did get some emails, and there's a couple that I put in the book that I thought were so helpful from friends who also lost their spouses. By the way, we should point out, Larry, this is 6% of the population, 3.7 million widowers, three times that, about 11.4 million widows. And that number is only going to go up dramatically as the baby boomers take their leave. So we're talking about it's going to happen to everyone. I wish I could say you can prepare for it. I don't think I could. But the good news here is that it does get better. It does get better. That haunting silence that you talked about, Larry. Eventually, you get used to it, and I come home now, and I'm happy to be home.
You know, this whole business about when you know that it's going to happen, and I can tell you that I had a daughter died, and we knew that was going to happen for a long time. What advice do you have for preparing yourself? Is there anything you can do to really prepare yourself for it? I found there wasn't much for me.
I found there wasn't much for me either. And I had some fantasies of, well, what would I be doing if Lisa weren't here anymore? And I had this vision. I describe it as, you know, when we're trying to think of infinity. And, you know, the mind can only go so far, and then you can't grasp the concept. And I could not grasp the concept. I thought I would be coming home and reading every book because I would have, you know, the nights free. So I would read every book in the house. I couldn't. I could read two pages at the most. And especially that first year, that your brain does come back. It takes a while. But your question is, how do you prepare? Maybe that's a question for your next guest, the psychologist, because I found I could not.
Did you
just have to deal with it?
And you know, I should have asked this maybe perhaps earlier, but you spent. And now I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. You said that you wish you'd had more conversations, perhaps, with Lisa about when she was alive, obviously, about the coming death.
And she could not discuss it. There are some people that can. I've talked to a lot of people in this situation. Lisa couldn't. I think there was a reason. I'm guessing. I don't know for sure, but she lost her own mother when she was 12 years old. And she was horrified at the idea of leaving her daughter in the same situation. And it was devastating for her. And so she couldn't discuss it. But what I would do is I would reverse it. And there would be times we would be sitting in the hospital and she would be looking at her iPad or something or reading something. I would be at my computer. And she would just say things, and she would say, well, I guess I'm going to be buried in Wisconsin. And I kind of reversed it, and I would say, well, if something would happen to me. I said, well, I would like to have, a very plain funeral, plain pine box, I want to be buried where my parents and grandparents and great grandparents are buried. And she kind of nodded and she said, okay, but she said she didn't want to have the funeral in a funeral home. And I said, fair enough. We'll have it in our synagogue. And then she kind of nodded to that too. There was a funny part. there were humorous things that happened here.
Yes.
Because it's life, you know, and you know, there are wacky things and strange things. So one day we were in the hospital and she said, you know, it is said that if you've had a really good marriage, it'll be easier for you to go into another relationship. And I understood what she was saying. She was giving me permission to move on in the kindest way. And now it was I who could not deal with it. And I said, I don't want to discuss it. And then I realized that was so ungracious. I should figure out, you know, a way to thank her for such a nice thought. So I said, okay, this is reversed, if something happened to me, would I want you going into a nunnery? And I said, no, I guess that wouldn't be fair. But I said, you cannot have sex in the boathouse out at the lake. That is my turf. And you even try that, lady, and I will come down and throw lightning bolts at you. And I got her to laugh. So that made me happy.
Oh, man. Warren Kozak, our guest today, his book, Waving Goodbye, Life After Loss, the story of the life of his wife, Lisa, dealing with her death and his experiences with mostly himself, but also with his daughter, Claire. Although Claire, I have to tell you, I'm skipping ahead here a little bit, but in your postscript at the end, such a moving, thoughtful, insightful, and wonderfully written story that your daughter wrote about her mother.
Thank you. What I did there, Larry, was I wrote at the end of the book, this is about how I dealt with Lisa's death. And I didn't know really how it was affecting Claire, because even though we were talking about the same person, losing a spouse and losing a mother are completely different. And she was only 19. And I didn't know until about 3 months later, she shared with me an essay she wrote for a college writing class. And I was so moved by it that when I put the book together, I asked her if I could use it, if I could put it in at the end. And she thought about it for a couple of days and she said, okay, fine, you can do it. And I really appreciated it.
And it added a lot to the book. In terms of the writing, you did mention Joan Didion. There were a lot of books that you just couldn't get through. But Joan Didion's book, The Year of Magical Thinking.
Yeah.
What was in that book that you writes
about the sudden death of her husband, who they were sitting at dinner and he had a heart attack and he went to a hospital and I think he died within a day. And so it was a different event. But she wrote this book and it's considered to be the gold standard of grief books. And there were five really superb pages in it that really that stayed with me. And in fact, I sent those five pages to other friends who have lost spouses. But the rest of the book, once again, I couldn't connect with. It was it didn't quite work for me. And you know, it works for other people, and I understand that. And the psychologist books that I said I could not understand, maybe they've helped other people, and that's a good thing. But I was just, from my point of view, it didn't really help.
Let's hear from Nancy in Grafton next. Nancy, thank you for calling.
Hi. Well, let's see. I could go a long, long ways because I've been knowing people dying, including my mother, right from when I was only 14 years old. And so anyway, but my husband died about 6 years ago, and I'm telling you, we had 14 kids.
Oh, my gosh. That's wonderful.
And one at a time, too. We didn't learn how to make no twins. We didn't learn how. But anyhow, we practiced a lot. But anyway, he was in the hospital, you know, and he passed away. But the thing is, I worked at a nursing home after I had my 14th child. I went and get some training for doing that, and then after a while I was a hospice volunteer, so I knew a lot about those things. But you know, this is something that I gotta tell you. We were I'm pretty old gal, but anyhow, Bob and I are from Marathon County up there, and there was a lot of polka dancing going on, and we were one of the best on the floor. And man, oh man, when Bob died, I wanted to have a polka funeral. We're Catholic. But I said, we want to have a polka funeral. And it took a lot of, and our young priest finally let me have a polka funeral. And the good time Dutchman played all polka music and all spiritual words. And following the casket after the funeral, everybody was going right with the music, and nobody was crying, and everybody was smiling. And that's exactly what Bob would have wanted. And now he's buried right up the street from my house. I go up there every day. And, you know, my room was up there, too, but I got no blankets, no pillows, no, and my maiden name was Crawl, but I didn't crawl in yet. So anyhow, someday I'm going to get up there, too. But, you know, I look forward to the reunion, and I hope to heck he didn't find somebody to go dancing with him up there in heaven, because I'd be mad. I'd be jealous.
Well, Nancy, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And just a reminder, Warren Kozak is our guest. He is the author of Waving Goodbye, Life After Loss. And speaking of loss, we kind of lost him here. He was with us being a call, and we're going to get him back on. For sure, it might take a minute to do that, but we'll get him back on, and he'll be talking with us. I've got his book is just a wonderful book. It is as he said at the beginning, it's not a long book. It's a fairly short book, 175 pages or so, and each chapter is fairly short. Usually just a few pages, and deals with kind of specific things that happened over the last 6 years or last 5.5 years or so to him and somewhat to his daughter as they had to deal with the death of his wife, Lisa. And we've talked a bit about why or how she happened to die, and a bit about him dealing with the silence and having to deal with family and friends and getting over grief. And it's a very difficult thing. And I'm so glad we're going to be able to have Shyla Mergane come on as well to talk even more about this. And we're going to get Jill is giving Warren a call right now, and we'll get him on. And I think we have him back on. Warren, are you there?
I am here. We seem to be having some technical difficulties today.
That's okay. Let's take a call from Laura in Milwaukee. Hi, Laura.
Hello.
Hi, Laura? Thank you for calling. What is on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to share, if I can, I tell people I'm okay.
I
try to talk about it.
Yeah, you know what? I think Warren has some comments on that, Laura, and thank you so much for calling. We feel your pain. We feel your grief. Warren?
You know, this happened to me all the time, and it sometimes it hits you, and at times it comes out of the blue. I've called it a sneeze. You know, all of a sudden it comes on. You have no control over it. And And sometimes there are no discernible reasons for it, but, you know, it is part of the process, I think. It happened to me less after the first year, less after the second, but it still hits me. It still hits me.
Yeah. Laura, I'm sorry for your loss, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, you know, you mentioned earlier the percentages of men and women, widows and widowers, and there's a lot more women. There are a lot more widowers than there are widows, and men seem to remarry more often than women.
Yes, by a huge percentage. I've heard a number of different reasons for this. One is that men can't be alone. Women have an easier time dealing with that. I don't know if that's true or not. The other thing is there's a basic unfairness in our world where, you know, it would be not unusual for a man in his 60s to go out with a woman in her 50s or even 40s. And you don't usually go in the other direction there. But women do get into other relationships, and that's a very good thing. Well, you know, one of the important questions, Larry, I think would be what helped the most?
Yeah.
And what helped, and everyone is different, but what helped me was just putting on my socks every morning and getting up and forcing myself out. I'm so grateful. I have a job that I love, and dealing with people all day long helped. Just dealing with people getting to work, helped me. And I also have, you know, I am grateful. I am so grateful. I had so much more than a lot of people had. I had a great marriage. Not everyone gets that. I have a child who I adore, and our relationship has grown very, very close, closer. And I know not everyone gets that. As I said, I have work that I find very fulfilling. I have a great boss who I need to say something about this man. He travels a lot, and I would travel with him. And when my wife got sick, he said, I want you to stop traveling with me. I want, you know, work remotely. And I would be working from the hospital. But because of that, I got to be with her for the last 3 years of her life. And you don't find bosses like that too often. If I spent the first half of my career at ABC News as a writer for the different anchors. And if I'd still been at ABC, I would have had to make a choice, either leave work and lose my health insurance and to be with my wife or not be with my wife. And that's the other thing. I had health insurance, and I can't imagine losing someone and then also losing your life savings. And that happens to people. So I guess I'm at the end of the book, I said, never thought I would write this, but I feel very lucky. I feel lucky that she was in my life, number one. And I have fabulous memories of her. And those sustain me.
And you say, and I think you're right, you say at the end you realize this is kind of a love story.
That was the other thing I realized, that just as, you know, I was reluctant to talk about religion, but you cannot avoid it because religion is so intertwined with death. It's such an important part of it. And also love is too. It's very much a love story. And lucky me at the end to have had this.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you talked about listening to Spotify a lot. That's one thing you like you like to do, and it keeps you going. And we decided to maybe nearing the end here that we would play one of your favorites songs by Eva Cassidy, who unfortunately lost her life too early, is Fields of Gold. So let's, you know, right now, let's listen to Eva Cassidy singing Fields of Gold. Warren Kozak, our guest today, his book, Waving Goodbye, Life After Loss. Warren, it's been such a pleasure. I'm sorry we didn't have more time. There's so much in your book that we haven't talked about. And you were right. There are times in the book when a person can laugh or get a big smile. Thank you so much for writing it, and I really hope a lot of people get to read it. Thank you so much, Warren.
Larry, thank you. Thank you.
It's been a real pleasure talking with Warren Kozak. Please take a look at his book. And coming up, we'll be continuing our show on dealing with grief as Shyla Morgain joins us. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio.
But I swear in the days still left, we'll walk in fields of gold. We'll walk in fields of gold.